Welcome to the Gateway Podcast, where we get a chance to sit and talk to the outstanding professionals who serve in the 37 Training Wing. I get the privilege to host this podcast and serve as Warhawk Nation's Command Chief. So, without further delay, let's jump into it. As a reminder to all listeners, all topics discussed are unclassified, and the views expressed by our guests and hosts are not necessarily the position of the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or any government agency. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Warhawk Podcast. I'm Chief Master Sergeant Carlos Francisco Damian, the lucky individual who gets to be the Warhawk Chief at least for another year, barring anything crazy happen, right, boss?
Right.
and today we are doing a 6-series podcast, and this is the season finale. Save the best for last, if you will. Some Vanessa Williams, where we're talking about 1990s and 80s.
Nice.
You see that, how that works? So, boss, if you can do me a favor and introduce yourself. I'm already kind of gave it away. Introduce yourself, your hometown, and the base you were at before here.
Sounds good. First off, I did not know Francisco.
That's you didn't know that?
I did not know that.
Yes. Three first names.
No, that's impressive. My middle name is Lee. Like Willie Lee Cooper. Like, how country is that?
It is
way country.
Your first name is
Willie. Not William, Willie.
And then your middle name is
Lee.
So Willie Lee
Cooper the third. So there's two other cats with that name rolling around before me. Like, how crazy is that?
And we're going to AFA, and you grew up right outside of DC.
I grew up right outside. Yeah. So my dad was in the Air Force, so place I was born, Sacramento, California.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm going to try again. born in Sacramento, California. Spent some time there. My dad was in the Air Force. I'm a military brat. Retired Master Sergeant. Spent time in California. Went over to the Philippines and then went to D.C. I claim D.C. because that was the longest time we spent anywhere. I was there for junior high and high school. Went to Big Bag Blue in Southeast D.C. So when we go back out to AFA, we realized, like I told everybody, don't go to Southeast. You'll know as soon as you walk into Southeast, you're in the wrong spot.
Is it?
It is. It's legit.
I've seen DC a couple times.
See, everybody sees DC, the nice DC.
I stay in the nice DC.
Yeah. It's the Northwest DC and the Northeast DC. The Southwest DC is where bowling is. Then the Southeast DC is right outside of Bowling Air Force Base. I'm telling you, when you cross that, it's Martin Luther King and Malcolm X Boulevard. Like those two names right there, cross it over. It's legit, people. Like it's a different world over there. But back to the point. Before this, Scott Air Force Base, Illinois. Which was great. Was there for 4 years, first at Transcom for 2 years, and then at the Mission Support Group there for 2 years.
So what was it like when they, the general calls you? I always imagine it to be pretty dramatic curtain reveal. You know, you're getting an envelope and all these things.
Yeah.
But when you found out you're going to be the Warhawk Commander, Warhawk 1, over here in 37 Training Wing, what was that like?
So first off, let me tell you, it was anticlimactic at first because there's so much time between the command screening board and getting ready for that piece, and then them actually telling you. So you start the process in like April, and you don't find out anything until like October, and it's crickets. The only thing that happened to me, which I thought was kind of funny, and it didn't make sense at the time, but I would have people walk by like quietly. Hey man, they're talking about you. Like, who's talking about me? And what are they talking about? That's all I can tell you. Next week, another dude. Hey man, I'm in the room. They're talking about you. I'm like, I don't know what that means, right? So it goes crickets right after that. And so then I get a call from a friend just saying, congratulations. I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about. They wouldn't actually tell me anything. They just said, congratulations. Well, I thought it was kind of odd. So finally, I get a call from my wing commander at the time, who says, hey, man, you got a wing. You're going down to 37 Training Wing. And I was like, yeah, that's not funny. It didn't hit me until then my NAF commander, my 18th Air Force commander, Major General Martin, knocked on my door. At my house, because we live around the corner from each other. And when he knocked on the door, at the time, I was in there doing dishes. I was cleaning. I got one kid upstairs in the bath. I got one kid doing homework. I got one kid gone someplace. My wife is doing something. So I got a roll of paper towels and Windex in my hand. And I answered the door. He's like, hey, Will. And I'm like, hey, sir. And the first thing I'm thinking of is he had just got back from traveling. And we were supposed to be working on his zipper in his house. So I'm thinking he has come to talk to me about his zipper not being done in his house. Because that's what happens at Scott Air Force Base. You get random people knock on your doors to talk about it. So I'm like, ah. Oh. But then I look and his wife is there. I'm like, ooh, that's weird. His wife is here. And I look in his hand, like, ooh, he has a drink. He's like, congratulations, 37 Training Wing. And it still didn't hit me because I just wasn't expecting it. And so while I kind of got excited about it, I kind of tempered my emotion because I still kept thinking, man, this is kind of a joke. Like, somebody is setting me up. And so until I got actually Colonel Corshane, when she sent me a note, I was like, all right, it's official. We're in, right? And at that time, I was excited, anxious, nervous, all the feelings, all the feels.
So you've been in the sea for a while. And that was the first time I've heard this. So again, getting back to this podcast, this Warhawk podcast, the Gateway to the United States Air and Space Force podcast, that was the first time I've heard that story.
Yeah.
And we started the podcast just to see if it hits, see if people are listening, to talk about stories, talk about people, and just get to know people in our wing better, right, things a little bit better. So that was the first thing. So I'm sure there's a lot of people out there like, why do you guys run a podcast? Don't you have things better time? And I feel, and I, after speaking with you for the last, 3 months or so you've been in the seat, it's awesome because that's all we are, isn't necessarily our stories. Like, right, that's a big piece of who we are.
Right.
So what's your story? Why'd you decide to join the Air Force? Was there something like a calling, or was it just something that you felt like doing?
Yeah. So it was weird. So initially I had no intention of joining the Air Force. So my mom was a great recruiter. Like, she put so many people in the Air Force, she should have been paid. because she was a military brat, her father was a B-52 navigator, is what he called himself. She loved the Air Force. That was what she wanted. Married to an Air Force man, loved the Air Force. Every moment she thought that we were around, she would say, you're going to the Air Force. You're going to the Air Force. You're going to the Air Force. All of our friends, you're going to the Air Force. You're going to the Air Force. You're going to the Air Force. So my little brother joined. I was forced into where I grew a little bit over one summer from 5'9 to 6'2, 6'3. I could shoot a jump shot and got a scholarship to go play basketball. So I was like, deuces, I'm not going to the Air Force. But I will tell you that the entire time I was out at school, I had a team. I had a family. I had a tribe with me, right? When I graduated and realized I was not going to be able to play in the NBA because I wasn't good enough, I was looking for that same feel. And the only place I could think of was the Air Force, because that's at least from a person who was just a part of the Air Force, right? A dependent. You still had that same feel.
Yeah.
And that's what I was looking for. And so after I graduated, couldn't make it to the NBA, was doing some random jobs, I realized, yeah, this is not the environment I'm looking for. And the only place I knew where to find that environment was the Air Force. So here I am.
What keeps you coming back? You could have got out any time.
Oh, yeah. There was plenty of times I almost got out. But each time I was about to get out, what brought me back was a person, right? There was a person there who spoke to me at the right time with the right words to help re-blue me. One time was right at SOS. One time was just after we went through a RIF board, a reduction in force board. There was a person that just talked to me from that perspective. And we kind of talked about this the other day at the newcomers brief. There are so many people out there that want to help you that you don't even realize.
Yeah.
That helped me, right? Just a word here, a word there. There was a colonel who said, hey, you know what? I think you'd be a colonel. I had never thought about that at the time. I was like, really? Okay. That just opened up a whole nother level. A friend of mine said, you know what? I think you'd be a pretty good this or a pretty good that. Those are all things I didn't think I could do. That somebody said I could, that helped me believe that I could. And so it's people like that that kind of kept bringing me back to the Air Force. Each time I thought about walking away, somebody stepped in and said, no, what about this? Here I am.
So what's inspiring you now? What are things out there that just, wow, that really keeps, you spoke to it a little bit, but what are things out there that inspire you? Books, podcasts, movies, family, what's out there?
Yeah. So family is always one, right? Just watching my kids grow and develop into the people they're going to be. That is always inspiring, just to know that I play a little bit of a role in that. So for me, how I define success is my ability to help somebody else be better, right? To see somebody else win. And if I can play a role in that, that's great. And that's great because we can do that in the Air Force all the time. And that's great because what do we do here? We help produce and develop better citizens for the world. We're helping people be better.
Yeah. So many different formats too.
Yeah.
I think you and I speak about it quite honestly, especially we have pretty much different commanding officers from the wing level and above every week. And it's talking about our wing. That's one of the things I really, and it's not the ego thing. Mm-hmm. I think what comes from me is like your just pure pride, though. And maybe exactly. I mean that's saying the same thing, but
it's the same. Yeah,
the four different distinct groups.
Being so proud are the people that we get a chance to walk around with every day. And so watch them do the things that they do. It is inspiring, right? Just because you know it's not easy, right? You know there's so many barriers to everything that we do. But the CFO still get up every morning and get it done every morning. And it's a Super Bowl for everybody else here, right? For the families that show up here, for the trainees that show up here, it's their one time. And for us, it's maybe the 25th time. Maybe it's the 40th time. Maybe it's the 50th time. But you can't tell the difference, right? Because there's a level of pride and enthusiasm associated with what they're doing that you can't tell. They're just happy to be here and get it done. And I can appreciate that. It helps me.
Absolutely. Like when we go over, that's one of the things, like everybody finds those wins. And you know, like during the dark days, dark times, hey, we never have enough money, resources, or manning. You know, we talk about that frequently. Those are things that are just, you know, they're deficits, but you do the best you can.
Facts, right? Yeah. We deal with the facts, right? And so it's like I said, I never fight the person's feelings, right? And if you're feeling like this is hard because of this reason, I would probably agree with you, right? I think what's great about the folks here is that we can acknowledge that it's hard. We can acknowledge that there's a lot of burden associated with what we do here. But I think we also understand all the blessings that we have to be able to do it, that keeps you going forward. And so I think kind of what you and I talk about all the time, our job is to do what we can to reduce barriers and remove barriers, right? Cheer the people on, remove barriers. Pretty much our jobs, right? And I'm grateful to be able to do that at this wing, because this wing is amazing.
Yeah, you said that the citizens, and again, it's not my ego, it's not the pride, it's more the pride is like, hey, we have such a diverse portfolio in the groups. We have 737 training group, commonly referred to as basic military training,
right?
For the Air and Space Force. That's an amazing feat on and into itself.
Right.
But then you have the 37 training group, which is the largest, I say these words so often, the largest single AFSC in our security forces, and 27 other technical trainings that are part of this wing. They're part of our fabric, you know, our tapestry of the things that we're building here. And then we have, like you said, we build better citizens for the world. I don't think a lot of people understand, I think, what you mean by that. But when I articulate, when I hear those words come, you know, come from you, I think about the 637th training group, which is also commonly referred to as the Defense Language Institute, teaching 100 different partner nations English as a second language.
Right.
And then our IAFA does international partnerships for the Caribbean, Central, and South America. It is literally trying to do your best to improve, tell the American story, show the American, I would say they show the American might, the American dream, all these things, but it comes so vastly full circle in so many different aspects in this wing. It's I like being part of this wooden shoe.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of twofold, right? I think that specifically, yes, you can tie that directly to the folks because they're international. But I think holistically, it's the idea that every one of us is a citizen from a different community, right? We all came from some different background to come into this Air Force, to come to this wing. And we're all going to go back out to some other piece of the world, some other community, whether it's me or you retiring and you going back to Cali, or me going back to DC, or maybe say you retire and you go someplace else and I go someplace else. We are still carrying with us the skills, the traits, the values that were started here, right? And that we can reinforce here.
Yep.
And so when you send those people out, I'm hoping that we took the time to really reinforce that. So when they go back out to the world, wherever they go, what part of the world they go to, they are better. That's the least we can do.
What's inspiring you? What inspires you?
Like I said, I think the other portion is, you know, what makes me feel valued? What makes me feel valued is though my voice, my thoughts, that I am seen and I am heard, right? And I know that's kind of an odd thing to say when you're a wing commander, right? But I've not always been a wing commander, right? I was a second lieutenant where everybody thought I was Aaron Basic because nobody thought I was an officer, right? I was a captain where people said, well, you're not going to make it past captain, man, because you got to shave that mustache. You got to do this. You can't do that. You can't do this, right? All these different things, these pressures that were put on top of you to conform to something that may not be you, right? And so struggle through that. But even as a wing commander, right, I still need to earn the trust to where you value my voice, right? I mean, it's one thing for you to call me boss because I'm a colonel, but it's much more powerful for me if you talk to me and understand that we are on the same page and that you value where I'm coming from and that you respect that and trust that than if you just respect and trust this rank, right? This only takes you so far anyway. And for the folks not watching on TV, I just pointed at my rank. My rank can only take me so far.
I usually say things like that too. I was like, hey, what is this? Obviously not a video podcast. Yeah. We're not that high tech yet.
I caught myself. Super good.
So let's revisit this mustache.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I had a stash, man. It was strong.
You had a mustache?
I did. Then it was frowned upon though.
Was it full or it wasn't was it full. Pencil?
It wasn't pencil. It was a little bit in between, right? I couldn't get the full, right? I don't have that type of facial hair, like machismo, right? But it was solid, right?
Okay.
When I was in college, I used to rock the mini fro. These are probably for our young folks in the room. They're not going to know this.
Yeah, we do have people in the room right now. Yeah. We have our editor and producer and one of our collaborators in here as well.
And they're sitting here laughing at me.
Yes, they are.
But it's okay. It's cool. It's a good kind of energy. But let me just say this. For the folks who are out there old head, St. John's University had a dude named Malik Sealy, right? African-American dude, probably about 6'6", 6'7". He wore the best mini fro ever. And he had these like sideburn pork chop things that kind of looked like it was a helmet strap. Was legit. I always wanted that. So when I got to college, that's what I rocked, right? Then I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to change it up. And I'm going to go with the mustache and the goatee. Then when I came to the Air Force, they're like, you can't really rock a mustache. And I was like, but I like my mustache. But, you know, I compromised. I got rid of the mustache. I grew the hair out. And here I am.
I had a mustache too.
Yeah.
And Sean always asked me, he's like, you had a mustache? And she pitches like, you do not look good with the mustache. And I'm like, thanks, hon. Thanks for the support.
Well, the thing is, my wife and I were, you know, together before college, before we got to this Air Force gig, right? So she's seen me go through these different iterations.
She's seen mini fro and mustache.
Yeah, she's seen mini fro, mustache. She's seen bald head, goatee. She's seen the whole look, right? She's seen it all. So as long as she's still cool, I'm good. But it was a lot, man, for me to cut the mustache off because that was a piece of my like identity. It was like, oh my Lord, my guy's gone. What are we doing? My lips look so different. It's weird.
I think our producer over here is trying to look up your picture. He grabbed his phone immediately. And he's showing me a thing. It says he's bringing back No Shave November or Movember.
Here's what I always wanted, folks. And this is whenever we were deployed, they always do the mustache march, right? All that good stuff. Well, yeah, that's cool.
Deployed mustache.
Yeah, but that's not commitment. Here's commitment. Afro April.
Afro
like, you know how
April.
Much time it takes for you to grow an afro out?
Not
you
need
to be
April.
Ready for April? Like, that's legit, people. That's not a 6-month endeavor. That's a 6, 9, 7, 8, 9 month endeavor. That is commitment. Mustache march, man, I don't have to shave for like 3 weeks. I'm in, right? I want to diversify. Afro April.
I don't know what my hair would look like. I think I have too many grays.
To be fair, I don't know if mine will work either. I think it might be too thin in some areas. It might cause some shame.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm looking for hair clip for men.
Under 30 crowd can do that.
Yeah, under 30 crowd can get that done. But now, 50, I don't know if I want to take that risk.
So from a mustache to being a Niner fan,
yeah.
That's one of the things I ask. And you said, you know, before you jumped, let's jump straight into it. Well, like, why, how the Niners, boss?
Okay, so like I said, I was born in California, Sacramento, right? In my house, we had, because my mother's father was in the Air Force, they bounced around. So you have kids from all different states, right? So they all had different teams. We got folks from Philly who, you know, love the Eagles. I got folks who are Cowboys, who love the Cowboys. When I got to California, there was like three different sections in that house. Actually, two at the time. There were the Raider fans.
Yes.
My grandfather.
Okay. You're surrounded by him.
Right. Yeah. I love my dude. I don't know about that taste, but he rocked it. He was an old school dude, had a Cadillac, had his all Raiders hats in the back.
Yes.
Retired mass sergeant, all the stuff in there.
Get
it. Getting it done. Right. And always some sort of like smell good in the car. Right. And then my grandmother, who was a Rams fan.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
They make those?
Yeah, right? They were Rams fan.
Okay.
So for whatever reason, though, my mom was a Niners fan. She influenced me. I became a Niners fan.
There's a whole lot to that. There's some Air Force.
Yes.
Indeed, and now man. There's some Niners.
The okay. You see all the little layers there? It's legit.
All right. Well, something I like to sit on something you just said is that I call you boss.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at it, I can call you Colonel Cooper.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of times I call you Colonel Cooper. But for me, you know, coming back and people ask, well, you know, I just got to ask the question of why do you stay in? I was like, it's simple. Right. It's you.
Right.
It's you. It's the people.
Right.
Because the mission, if you don't get behind the Air Force mission, I was like, why would you even serve?
Right.
That's
right.
Part of it.
Right.
But the thing that really does keep you back is the people that, you know, that keep going. Mm-hmm. And we can get out at any given time. And this is not... I know these, most of these podcasts get, you know, kind of obliterated, a lot of negative right. comments. And right. I try to focus on as much positive, even as it there says, focus on the good.
Right.
And where I'm going with this is I call you boss. Mm-hmm. And the command chief of the day who's sitting over to my left and the exec sitting over here, the producer sitting in here, they ask you one of the reasons. I was like, well, one of my top reasons I would say is I get to choose for the most part. Like you get to select command chiefs. Mm-hmm. And there's a question coming. I'm just kind of prolonging this.
Yeah.
But you get to select your command chiefs, but also we get a say in who right. you get to work for and who you right. want to work for. And this is going to get completely obliterated, mm-hmm. I'm sure, on some sort of social media.
That's all right.
They're like, oh, my gosh, Carlos Francisco Damian, mark that name down. He is kissing Sincerity's butt. But we get a chance to work for who we want to work for. That keeps you in as well, to give you right. the freedoms and the latitude to move left and right and move things forward. But also, we do get these things right. Mm-hmm. I really believe the Air Force is pretty damn good at selecting our wing commanders and pretty good at selecting our higher level echelon. And again, that's my truth. I'm not going right. to say it's true for everybody, but it is my truth. So here in a few months, you'll be selecting my replacement.
Right.
You're going to be selecting the individual who comes and we're going to, you know, do our best to pour into that, whoever she is or he is, mm-hmm. and get after it. What does a good chief look like to you? I get to ask you a question because I'm on the podcast now.
Yeah. So besides you. So here's what I think, right? The traits of a good chief that I think you illustrate all the time, right? You showcase all the time. One, you got to be willing to step in and talk to me, right? To power, whatever you want to use, right? But you got to have somebody who is willing to say, hey, listen, boss, I don't know if that's right. Hey, listen, I think, have you considered this, right? Because you need... those different viewpoints to make sure that you're seeing the picture correctly and that the action you're trying to take to affect that picture are the appropriate actions, right? Listen, as a officer, I got basic things I do, right? I show people how much I appreciate them and I make decisions. If you look at an officer, man, that is the baseline of things of what I do. But I can't do that really well if I don't have somebody like a chief who has the skills and the traits to, one, be out with the people, earn the trust of the people, of the folks, and then two, be willing to voice to me the feel of what people are going through in the environment that we're sharing, right? Two, I think the critical thinking piece of it, right? It's one thing just to be transactional. Here's what's going on. It's another thing to critically think, to say, okay, well, here's why I think the source is. And here's how I think of some ways that we could address it. And here's what I think that I can do, or here's where I think that you kind of hang out and you go do this, right? I'll let you know when you need to dive in. But that piece of it is important as well. And I think just like anything else, right, in a relationship, there's got to be a solid foundation of trust, right? Whether it's trust from a shared experience, trust from a shared love of something, whatever it means. There has to be that there, right?
And commonality.
Yeah, something there to say, okay, listen, these are some things that we have in common. So the things that we don't have in common, that's cool. Right? They don't become the drivers, right? Because we always have something we can fall back on and say we are common. Like we know right now, your palate for food is different than my palate for food.
Way different. I don't eat chicken nuggets.
Food, right? Like I get down with chicken nuggets. I get down with pizza, right? I get down with the kids menu, people. This is what I roll with, especially if it has sweets on it. And so I know that my complex palate does not match yours.
Right? We can't eat sushi together.
I know. I'm just saying, I'm not going to hold that against you, right? And I don't think you should hold that against me, right? Because there's many more things that we get along with, right? Like, hey, I play basketball. You? I don't know.
I'm going to hit that because you know what he said? And you know what she said in the podcast? Yeah. I wrote it down too. Yeah. I wrote it because I wanted to come back to that.
Yeah.
Is you're like, yeah, I sprouted. I was short. I was 5'9". If you run it, like, I hope people run back the tape and it says,
did I say I was short?
I sprinted from 5'9". That's what I heard. From 5'9 to 6'3". And I'm like, I've never been 5'9". I was like, what's that like?
Let me just tell you, it was a wonderful jump. So I went a long roundabout way to get to college, right? So being in DC, I wasn't expected to get some sort of academic scholarship, right? People aren't coming to South DC and say, hey, man, here's an athletic or academic scholarship. But there was chances for athletic scholarships. And so I played in junior high and I played in high school for a year. And I was like 5'9", 5'10", right? And then I quit.
So whimsical when you said that.
Right. Yeah, it was
so matter of fact.
Well, listen, here's the deal. I had my mom was 5'11", so like I gotta at least beat her. Like she's 5'11". And she had a fro, so she was more like 6'1". Right? She was legit. She was towering over me, right? So I'm like, I gotta at least get to that, right? So I graduated from high school. Step back. I quit the varsity team, played AAU ball for a summer, traveled around all the kind of different places, and got spotted by this junior college. So I went to this junior college in Texas, Amarillo, Texas. Right. So I've been here before. And I came down there again, like 5'9", 5'10", like 155 pounds. I came back and I was 6'3", 180. My folks were like, what happened? And I was like, I don't care. I'm killing people. Because I used to be that dude that used to sneak into the gym and play basketball with all the airmen. And all the airmen would beat me up. Right. Because they're 21, 22. Right. And I'm 16, 17, whatever it might be. But fortunately for me, a lot of those folks stayed at bowling. And fortunately, now those young airmen, now staff sergeants, got a little weight on them, living a good life. And I was back to make them pay. And I made them.
Now I'm 6'3".
Now I'm 6'3", 180. I'm looking to dunk on everybody. And all those cats that gave me the stitches for the, you know, I had stitches on my eye from getting elbowed. I got cuts on my face. I'm coming to get you. And I did. And it was glorious.
Some of them are going to listen to podcasts and be like, oh, I remember him. Yeah. I remember. So
hey, I got an email from the other day from a dude who's here from CE Group who remember playing me basketball in Montana. He's like, I remember I played basketball with you. And I was like, yeah, I was killing people. That's right. Recognize.
So you play on the base teams and you didn't play a squadron team, did you?
I played squadron team. I played in base teams. I didn't get a chance to ever get released for the Air Force team. But I could play with the Air Force teams. I played with those guys. I'm pretty sure I could have. Yeah, I feel pretty confident with that.
All right. Another weird segue is, again, I talk about the Wolfpack. I have a fondness for the 8th Fighter Wing.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that is, you know, in the 90s, when I first came in, and I think it's kind of somewhat died off a little bit now. Yeah. But I used to love watching intramurals.
Oh, yeah.
And basketball used to be the thing. Hey, when playoffs happened, nobody would watch during the week. But when the playoffs came down for softball, football, and basketball, that base was there. Oh, yeah. My first base was Fairchild. But where I saw that again is the 8th Fighter Wing. You know, of course, where it's a remote.
Right.
You know, it's just us down there, you know, with the Fight Tonight mission.
Yep.
And you just reminded me on something, the FSS team that was down there. And if anyone's listening, they're going to hang up right now or they're going to hit delete on this. They were dominant.
Yeah.
Never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
But they had two Air Force Academy, Academy, and then one, I think, University of Georgia.
Okay.
And I was like, that's cheating. Yeah. That doesn't even like, and they were just manhandling everybody.
Yeah.
Until Camp Humphreys, and they're like those teams out there. So I bring one thing back, some of that heraldry, because you know we say we're a tradition of honor and a legacy of valor, but just that's a lot of our story as well. Our teams that was fun.
That's exactly, it's that competition, right? Yeah. That friendly competition on the, you know, especially like plays, because we had the same thing when I was at Montana, right? Because it was out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Right? And so intramurals was it, whether it was basketball, softball, flag football, right? Those three things.
Those are the three ones.
They brought the people out, right? And so it was great. And I was with security forces, so we were just running things, right? Because you had just security forces, first off, there's so many of them.
Were you section commander then, back then?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So there's so many folks from
security. You were their favorite section commander, right? I'm sure.
What's that?
You're their favorite section commander.
I was the one that didn't get fired.
We need them for the team.
The previous two, one just got, you know, just couldn't acclimate to the environment.
Tough environment.
And then two, just made some bad choices. So I came in the third and it was like, I can handle you people, right? Throw a curse word at me. This guy don't play in college basketball, man. There's not a curse word. There's not a combination of curse words that you can throw at me that's going to surprise me. My coach used to say them all the time. while he made me run, right? So it was actually a really good experience, right, to be able to get over there and become an honorary defender.
So you talk a lot about being nice versus kind. Mm-hmm. This should hit maybe our target audience is anybody who wants to listen to the Warhawk podcast or the Gateway podcast. Can you explain a little bit of that about being nice versus being kind?
Yeah, especially I think it's important that we be kind, not nice. And so the nice piece of it is a nice person is really concerned about how you feel and really more concerned about how you feel about them, right? So they're more concerned about how you feel about them, which means in an effort to make sure that you don't get upset with them, that there's no friction, that there's no conflict, they may be unwilling to make decisions, unwilling to have that tough conversation, unwilling to uphold the standard, right? That's a nice person. And I think nice people do a pretty good job in the military, but only for so long. Because at some point, people go around the nice person. At some point, the nice person becomes a hindrance. I prefer to be kind. I care about each and every one of you, right? I want you to be successful. But that also means we have to uphold standards. It also means we have to make sure that our behaviors are proving each other proud. It just means that there's more to it than how you feel about me. It's how we feel about the behaviors that we should be showcasing on behalf of each other, since we're all in this Air Force, we're all at this wing, right? That's what I think is important. And I think you can do that without being demonstrative. I think you can do that without being demeaning, right? Because that's the other side of it. You have people who are all about the standards and they treat you horribly, or they're all about the mission and they don't think about you as a person. I don't want to be that person either. So kind, it's right there in the middle. It works for me.
What comes next?
For what?
Yes.
For this wing, for you, for me, for what?
For you. What comes next for you? And it's a wide open question.
Yeah.
How do you look at yourself growing? What comes next for you as a colonel, as a husband, as a father, as a person?
Yeah.
What comes next?
I say first as a person, I don't know, because I'm just trying to be better each day, right? So my goal as a person is just to try to, we talked about this a lot and people hear this and I'll say the same thing over and over, is I'm trying to become the person I'm meant to be. Every day I'm taking that opportunity to do that, whether it's from hanging out with people like you, going out and seeing people at the wing, reading, podcasts, listening to other people, all that informs and helps influence how the next step I'm supposed to take. As a husband and a father, is try to be a little bit better than I was yesterday, right? Yesterday, I think I brought this up before. Yesterday I had a great interaction with my wife, right? Positive interactions with her. Three positive reactions with three of my kids. One kid, not so much. One kid, me and I, we just did not see eye to eye yesterday, right? So today I had to wake up to make sure I had some sort of positive interaction with him. And that's what I do every day as a dad or as a father, as a husband, right? Just those things. Each day, right? I can't look that far. I just got to look, how was I yesterday compared to what I'd be tomorrow? As far as a colonel, I don't know, man. I'm going to borrow time, right? This was a 2-year extension of the last contract, right? We negotiated. So here in a year, the Air Force will kind of get a sense for what they think I'm doing as far as being successful here. But I will tell you, I never worry about how the Air Force judge me. My thing is, if I leave here in 1 year, the people I had a chance to interact with, I would hope they would say I was trustworthy. That's it. I earned their trust and I was able to maintain their trust based off my words and my behaviors, my action all matching. As far as anything else with the Air Force, that's at some point we all get to that point in the Air Force where you either hit that glass ceiling or you realize it's no longer for you.
Yeah.
Right. For me, I thought the glass ceiling was at the group. I did not expect to get to be a wing commander. So when I got that, I was like, ooh, greatness, 2 more years. Let's do this. But I'm not going to change the core person of who I am to be successful in the Air Force.
That's what I'm hoping. I ask that question to folks. I'm like, what comes next? And I want all questions to be as open-ended as possible. Yeah. But sometimes I think about that, on my deathbed, this is weird, But sometimes I think about this. Okay. And hey, I'm going to share this with you. I was actually walking my dog this morning. Yeah, I saw you. I saw you and I saw Chief Danny Council from the IMSC.
Which reminds me, we go way back.
You and Chief Council?
Wendy Council. We used to babysit, like my wife and I, we were in Montana together. Chief Danny Council was deployed. My wife and I used to babysit their first son.
Get out of here.
Right? And now they live behind us.
Like right behind you with their loud cars. And yeah. He's got a podcast too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's called Unpopular Celebrities. Yeah. It's pretty good.
I would have had a ring on Council somehow. Like the Council has been heard. Yeah. Oh,
he is absolutely hilarious.
Okay.
And, you know, we were stationed in Kadena before when we were both squadron chiefs. Yeah. Then. And it's always nice to see. It is a small Air Force. Oh, yeah. The way we were talking about that earlier today.
Yeah.
How small the Air Force
and
can
it's
be.
It's cool if you have a good reputation as a small Air Force. Yeah. It's not so good if you got a bad reputation as a small Air Force because everybody knows.
Yeah. They're, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Chief Damien, 5'8".
Right.
Got him.
Yeah. No, really. Like, ooh, that Will Cooper dude. He's coming your way. Oh. Like, that's usually not a good sign.
But I'm out there walking Sancho today. Yeah. And, you know, as we're walking, I'm like, get older, 46, just had my 46th birthday. And yeah, I hope, and I want to answer my own questions.
Yeah.
But one of the things I hope that comes next at the end of my life, and this is a very, you know, hopefully robots are working on me by then. Okay. I mean, I'm 170 to 180 with modern technology and living a good life, and my back is
got a
fixed.
Lot of upgrades. Yeah.
Yeah. I got some upgrades. Yeah. I may have like, you know,
I just calf implants. That's it. I said it. Calf implants.
Yeah. I don't even want to
really long
that.
Lower leg. I just want calf implants.
Would you trade height for calves? We're all way off topic. Ooh, now,
I was just saying, listen, at this stage of my life, probably so.
I doubt it. You could see all kinds of different stuff from way up high.
No, I agree. But
I've never
lived
how
that. Much would it be a change, though? Like, if it's like 6'3 to what?
Say it, boss.
No, I'm just asking.
Say it, 5'8, boss.
You tell me.
5'8, now I got the whole room trying to contain their laughs. Yeah,
okay, listen, I can go 6'3 to 5'11 for some calves. That's about it, 5'11.
I'd give my calves to be 5'11.
Yeah.
No. I have not gotten to this point yet, but
my bad.
This is exactly why I enjoy. I mean, there's so much stress, and this is a time we've taken the last 42 minutes, and whatever they edit the podcast down to be. We're taking the last 42 minutes to, again, why do we record this? And people are like, why do you have enough time to do that? I'm like, maybe, maybe not, but we're doing it. We're going to take
bring us joy, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it's another way to connect. So,
exactly.
Listen, I don't really concern myself with people who like to judge from the outside, right?
You know,
never argue with a fool, right? Because a person far away can't tell the difference. I live by that model, people. Just not going to do it.
Ooh, one of the fool things too is like I always tried, and this is where I fall short a lot, is never miss the opportunity to be quiet.
Oh, yeah.
Because the second you open your mouth, you prove, you either prove them right or you prove them wrong.
Right.
And, you know, like they say, a fool always speaks first. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wish I can get away from that sometimes. But I do, at the end, 180 years old.
180 years old. You've had some
upgrades. Maybe I'm even taller.
You've had some upgrades. That's all we're going to leave it at that.
Okay.
Some upgrades.
And I hope that I have those aha moment towards the end as well. Because those are some of the most... I think, I don't know, because I'm getting older. It's like, I really like those moments.
Right.
When you're like, I didn't mean that. Even if I'm watching something like cheesy on Instagram or something, I'm scrolling through a life hack reel.
Right.
And you're like, whoa, I did not know that. Right. That is so exciting. So what is one of the last things and we can close the show with that? Yeah. Actually, I won't close the show with that.
Yeah.
But what is one of those aha moments you've had here in the last few months, last year or so? Something you're like, ooh, that really kind of knocked me on my butt a little bit.
Knocked me on my butt. That's a great question. I don't know.
Perplexing.
It is perplexing. I know I've had aha moments, but I don't know if they've impacted me as much as what you're kind of implying. I think here's an example of a moment. I didn't realize how much my wife was paying attention to what I do. Right. So for me, and my family, for the longest time, most like, and maybe it's like this for a lot of folks, where you kind of separate life and work. Right. I've got the identity of dad and husband. I've got the identity of officer in the Air Force. And usually those identities don't crash, because when I get home, I try not to be Air Force officer guy. I try to be husband and dad. Mm-hmm. And so even when I have conversations with my wife, which I don't think I did a good job early, but I think I'm doing better now, I wouldn't necessarily tell her everything that was going on. I wouldn't give her insight. I would just say, here's the day. But we were out for the civic leaders that came from Charleston. And we had a gentleman asking questions. And what surprised me was how many of the answers my wife was able to give.
Yes.
Right. And I was like, huh. One, she really knows what she's talking about there, which means she was paying attention at some point to what I was saying. And she did some research. So I think those type of aha moments. Like if somebody
awesome.
Recites back to me something I've said, like if I have some folks just come back and talk about being curious or precious, or problem versus polarity. I've had a lot of folks come to me and say, hey man, that makes a lot of sense to me. Whenever someone comes back and tells me that, I'm like, oh my Lord, somebody listened to me. I'm shocked, right? I'm thoroughly like shocked and impressed. When we were coming from one of the graduations, like I was told and I've heard that the new trainees have to study, you know, their chain of command, right? Yeah. And I've even been in there and I've seen like the wall where they're looking at it.
Oh, you're on it.
Right. But I never assumed anybody actually recognized me. But I was out walking across the way from Colonel Anderson, and this airman was walking towards me. They just got done graduating. They're walking with their family. And I was just going to try to skate by, right? Because I just figured they're with their family. They stopped and looked at me, and they double take. And then you can see like this enthusiasm come over their face. And then I'm getting enthused. I'm like, why do they know me? I don't know them, but I'm getting enthused, and she's enthused, and I'm enthused. And it's like, huh. That's, I wouldn't expect that. So it's those type of deals where you're like, okay, little moments that stick with you.
It's strange because I remember, you know, being a young airman too, and like, oh my goodness. It's almost like when you're young and you see a principal.
Right.
In normal, I would call them back in California, we call them street clothes or your regular clothes.
Right, right.
You know, you see them in the mall or something and you're like, oh my gosh, there's Miss Betty or Miss Blackman. You're like, oh.
Right.
And I got kind of nervous and I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It's not an ego state thing because I think we both look at it kind of the same way. I'm like, you should see, I was on I sit on my couch and I throw down flaming hot Cheetos just like anybody else. Right? You know, like these are the things and you're like, oh,
because you come into the house on a Sunday morning, you'll see me with like Clorox and like a toilet scrubber, people. I'm getting down with like doing the scrubbing, right? Because at the house, I'm just... Dad, Will, or Smalls.
Did you say on Sundays?
Yep.
Because you have a winning team. I will be probably in tears with my face painted.
I try to get all this stuff done before these things happen, right? I've tried to establish a contract with my wife to say, hey, listen, anything that we want to get done on Sundays has to be done between this hour and this hour. And some flexibility built in case our team is playing at certain times. So I've tried to negotiate that with the wife. She's not signed the contract yet. I'll let you know if it works. But right now, she's got all the negotiating power.
Now, hardest thing about living on the East Coast, how did you grow up? Like, I always think that this is kind of bananas to me. And this is a completely off the wall question.
Go ahead.
I had a hard time being stationed on the East Coast because of the time difference of football stars. Why do y'all do that?
Who be y'all?
Because that's the East Coast. I blame all East Coasters for that.
Well, okay. First off, that's where all the eyeballs are at, man. Like, you got to make money when you put these things on TV.
So it's all West Coast driven, though.
No, West Coast is providing the supply, but the demand's coming from the East Coast.
When is the Sunday night football start?
What, it's like 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock?
9 o'clock at night.
9 o'clock at night. Yeah.
Because that is, I'm 46 years old. I am night night time.
Well, I get that, man. I've not seen a Sunday night football game since I was 37.
You know,
I
the best part is go to Korea or to Japan and it's like the next day.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is in the morning. I like.
Yeah.
I can have coffee and have this.
I like living in the West, though. It was like to split the difference, right?
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. Like when I was in Illinois, cool. I'm not saying I watched the whole game, but I probably got to the third quarter before it was time for night.
That's why I could not. You know, the Raiders played on Sunday night, which, you know, featured games.
Yeah.
They have very few of those unless they're getting beat up by the Kansas City Chiefs.
Which for the record is best team, so just be aware she's a Chiefs fan.
Oh, I That's right.
You know how hard it is to live with a Chiefs fan? I hope she doesn't
listen. Probably brutal. That's two Super Bowls you've up to them.
Exactly.
Ouch.
Exactly. Ouch. One time we were out east and my parents were over watching the game. And so my dad sat in between us to make sure there was no divorce papers.
Yeah.
Right? And we had to be very like emotionless to where when she won, I just had to walk upstairs, get my phone, order her some swag, tell her I love her and walk away. Right. This last year we were at the house and it was just me and her. And we almost couldn't watch the TV show together. We had to like have one upstairs, one downstairs, but the timing was off. So you would hear someone cheer and someone was like, what's happening down there? Right. And so when they came back and won that, it was the same thing. I just walked upstairs, got my phone, gave her the swag, kept her moving. It's hard. It's hard living with a Chiefs fan.
All right. We got to blow this thing dead, but I got to get another question.
Yeah.
And this is an on the spot question. So just boss, I'm about to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
And it can't be two. It can't be three. I'm sure at the end of the day, there's 40 or 50.
Okay.
This is a military-based question, the United States Air Force-based question, or maybe it could be a joint question or whatever. Right. One person that really rings out in your head right now, the first person to come to mind that really helped develop you as a person in your career. One person only.
Deborah Boreal. Senior Colonel Deborah Boreal. She was a security forces squadron commander out in Maelstrom. So I'm a sec lieutenant. And so she had fired two captains, right? One because, again, just got ate up by the culture, couldn't handle the pressure. Other one because she just made some bad choice. So she had fired the two. So I'm a sec lieutenant. When I first got there, like, hey, no, you can't go to those big squadrons. Security forces maintenance, they're too big for you. You're a sec lieutenant. Go hang out over here. So they put me in the game. So I get into the game. And she sat me down and I still have this feedback sheet that she gave me. Right. And it was impressive because it was feedback for me, the person, not the second lieutenant. And it sticks with me. Right. The other thing that stuck with me is that she was the person that taught me that just because it's been done before doesn't mean it was right. Right. And that went back to this idea that when we were there, you know, nuclear surety inspections are big deals.
Absolutely.
Big deals, right? And now you're a missile cop squadron commander, female squadron commander, and you're trying to tell the world that, listen, what you're asking us to do is impossible. Well, they've done it every other year. It's impossible. They've done it every other year. They've cheated, right? They've staged it to where they could be successful. And she said, I don't think we should do that because I don't think that's appropriate. And I don't think that is showcasing what we actually need, right? We're playing the game. So she taught me that sometimes to make the point, to get what you need, you don't play the game, right? You tell the truth. And so she was really, really influential for a second lieutenant coming in. Let me just put a little side there. One thing that was also funny. So I made up the set. Like she was lieutenant colonel. She had a major. She had a captain. She had a first lieutenant. She was missing second lieutenant. I became the second lieutenant. Now she had the set, right? And so we're sitting one day in her office and going around the room, the major is the opso, captain, everybody's going around the room and they're giving the little update, right? So I'm sitting there getting ready to give the update. And I went to say ma'am, but I said mom. I said mom. And I sat back because I realized what I said.
Is that a Freudian slip?
I don't know what happened, but it came out, right? Mind you, again, security forces squadron commander. Hard. Security forces members, officers, waiting. I see them all sit back too, like, oh, he's going down. We got to get another one. We got to find another second lieutenant, right? They sit back. I sit back. She looks up. I'm like, oh. She stands up. She's walking to me. I'm like, oh, no, she is going to cut me, right? Like, she is going to cut me right here. What do? I could probably take her out for a minute, but I don't know if I should. She gives me an apple. And then she says, what else you need, LT? I was like, every other officer in that office wanted to kill me because they realized now I was the favorite. Random story. But that's what I remember about her. Those two things, right? That mom statement, which could have killed me. And the idea that just because we've done it in the past to play the game doesn't mean we should continue to do it. We should probably tell the truth. So.
Well, awesome. Well, boss, thank you for taking this time out of the day. It's the end of our day.
Yeah.
But it's a good way to end it. Hopefully people get something out of it. And again, not to listen with cynical ears,
yeah,
but be skeptical. I've really listened to that lately, cynicism versus skepticism. So thank you for being vulnerable, putting yourself out there and being Warhawk One. Much appreciated.
So let me just say thank you very much for inviting me to do this. I appreciate it. Listen, there's a lot of burdens that come along with the jobs that we have here at this wing. There's also some blessings. This is a blessing, right? The joy I get for being able to sit across to you having this conversation. For the folks out there listening, I would ask that you be curious, not judgmental. Right? You can be curious about what we said and why we said it. You can even come talk to me about it, right? But just to judge us without actually talking to us, that's kind of rude, right? Yeah. How do you get better if you do that, right? And don't be wrong. I'm sure there are people out there that will always do that. And if that's the case, go get them. I just think that we owe it to each other to be curious, vice judgmental.
Thanks for that, boss.
All right.
And with that, it's a wrap.
Cool. Appreciate you.
Teammates, thank you for tuning in. For any topics, questions, or guest requests, please shoot me an email or leave a comment below. Thanks for tuning in. As a reminder to all listeners, all topics discussed are unclassified, and the views expressed by our guests and hosts are not necessarily the position of the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or any government agency.